time for Licking on Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Licking on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's your host of Licking on Lending, David Licking.
Let's begin.
Good to have you with us, everybody. It's Monday, November 5th, 2018. We say that for all of those who are not listening live, but listening on a downloaded basis. Welcome to November. I believe we're already there. And so how's this, the no daylight savings time working for you guys? I'm loving it. I wish they'd do away with daylight savings time. I like this time zone. It's working for me. Anyway, hope you're having a great day. Welcome to the podcast. This podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals. And we're honored and grateful to have you as our listener. We win awards. That's all good. But the best award we can get is having growing listenership. Getting feedback we get all the time from people that are emailing me, sending me messages via LinkedIn, saying, your podcast rocks. I listen to it all the time, and I'm so excited to have that kind of feedback. Kind of makes the effort all worthwhile. So a special thank you goes out to our program director who makes this all possible. Again, our commitment is to bring you timely information in an audio format that you can listen to anytime and anywhere. And goal is to bring it to you in an audio format. You know, I love, like, we've got Jacob. You can hear from him in a minute of Housing Wire. Got him on. Great print stuff. Also, what I'm finding, though, is people want to hear the narrative. They want to hear the discussion. So this is not to replace that which is out there in writing. Got to read it. It's great stuff. But what this is to kind of give you a theme of what's going on and put some personality around it, some commentary around it. And I think that helps. Last week, we had on two great guests from Movement Mortgage. Adam and Jacob were just awesome. We're so grateful to have them here. This week, we're going to continue talking about what's going on in video. So we have one of our partners, Vidyard, as their representative, Nico, here with us. And we're going to talk about how to get into video and how to make it work effectively. Again, you can check out our videos on Licking on Lending podcast, see what we're doing with Vidyard. We'll talk more about that in the Hot Topic segment, so stay tuned all the way through to that part of the podcast. Let's see here. Special thank you goes out to our sponsors, Mortgage Bankers Association of America. Love our partnership with them. Rob Van Raphorst has a word we'll give in just a minute. Also, Arch MI, the creator of the innovative RateStar program, as well as Black Knight, a leading provider of integrated software and data analytics solutions, and Open Mortgage, leading buyer of reverse mortgages, and, of course, the home of many top LOs. That reverse mortgage thing is really getting some extra income in the door for a lot of people. Then we have two co-ops we're thrilled to have as sponsors, Lenders One and the Mortgage Collaborative. Now, both of these co-ops are creating competitive advantages for both lenders and vendor members. Get up close and personal with the people that you want to meet, need to meet, through the membership with both of these co-ops. Again, cooperative, a group of people getting together to co-op and do something exciting for the industry. Velma, efficient mortgage marketing platform that we use for emailing out alerts. If you're not on our email alerts, email me, david@tms-advisors.com, or go to our website and sign up for the messages. Also, KnowledgeCoup, providing easy and fun training for lenders. Ken Perry and team, they do a great job of getting the word out and how to train people in a way that makes you just laugh and learn. You know, if you connect emotion, you'll hear about this a little bit later, but if you connect an emotion with something you're learning, you're more apt to learn it. That's why we got who we have on here. We're always creating some laughter and some emotions while we're talking about the hot topic stuff. So, more on that later. A special thank you goes out to Alice, to Andy, to Alan, Joe, and now Jacob, who's a part of the regular lineup of contributors to this podcast. Without further ado, let's get out to our good friend Rob Van Raphorst and get the MBA Mortgage Minute. Rob?
Hi, I'm Rob Van Raphorst. Welcome to the Mortgage Minute and the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. Last week, FHFA published its 2018 annual housing report, which provides an overview of the affordable housing activities. Fannie Mae met all five of its goals, while Freddie Mac met three of its goals, falling short of its low-income and very low-income home purchase goals. In the multifamily market, both enterprises met all three of their goals. Also last week, FHFA released a proposed rule to amend the affordable housing goals governing FHLB mortgage purchases through the acquired member asset programs. These programs allow FHLBs to purchase 15 to 30-year conventional mortgages and loans insured or guaranteed by U.S. government agencies. And finally, last Wednesday, the Federal Reserve Board issued an interagency plan and proposal to revising its prudential capital and liquidity regulatory standards for banking organizations. It didn't include anything on mortgage servicing rights, which is expected later in the year. Thanks for joining us this week.
Jeff, appreciate our partnership with the MBA. Again, as Rob said, head out to the website and sign up for Mortgage Action Alliance. So important to have your voice heard. Let's get over to Les Parker now. I have a chance to listen to most of his segments before he plays them, so I can just anticipate and see if I know that tune. Again, he mixes into a macro view of the markets. He ties it around a music parody. I didn't get a chance to listen to it this last week, but I'm excited to see what he's got for us this week. So, sponsored by LoanLogic's TM Spotlight. Les Parker, what you got?
TM Spotlight Soundbites is brought to you by LoanLogic's. Goodbye, Merkel, it's hard to cry when all your friends are smiling deep inside. Now that the fall is in the air, with a budget scarcely there, they wish that euro can be spared. After seasons in the sun, Merkel relinquishes party leadership and will forever exit politics at the end of her term as chancellor in 2019. The political shift in Europe leads to uncertainty and weakness in its currency, the euro. The benefactor is the dollar, which in turn gives hope for lower mortgage rates in the USA. Times, they are a-changing. Expect joy and some fun with more seasons in the sun. These views are my own. Go to tmspotlight.com to subscribe to my daily newsletter.
You know, Alice, that's from our era. We remember that song, don't we, Alice? It sure is good. I love that stuff. It's out there. Anyway, you do. We do. I love that stuff. Brings back some good memories. Hey, let's go over to Scott Gordon, who's got the Science of Sales. I love this segment. It's a great one. It's something he kind of is getting some, he's getting some notoriety on it. So I hope he's enjoying running a mortgage company. It's a successful mortgage company that does reverse mortgages, and it's the home of many top loan originators. If you're looking for a great home, check out Open Mortgage, because he's going to teach you the science of sales. Scott, let's listen to what Scott has for us this week.
Stories help customers relax and listen. They're memorable. They establish trust, and most importantly, they speak to the part of the brain where decisions are made. We make subconscious, emotional, and sometimes irrational decisions with one part of our brain. Then we justify those decisions with another. Stories provide depth and context to facts, which leads people to making secure and informed decisions. One poll found 30% of strangers are trustworthy. But when you asked what percentage of people you know, the median answer jumped to 70%. Telling a story is the most effective way to make someone feel like they know you. Stories provide glimpses into your world and invite your customers to tell you their stories. This cements trust between the parties, and once you have a customer's trust, you've usually got their business. A 2013 study found that only 1 in 5 sales calls provides enough stories to satisfy the customer. So why tell a story? Because it works. If this sounds too good to be true, it's not. It's just the science of sales.
I like that. Science of sales. Telling a story. That's going to talk more about how you can tell your story in the Hot Topic segment. Want to learn more about Scott Gordon and Open Mortgage? Check out their website, openmortgage.com. Great group of people making money, doing well, and prospering this market. And one way to do so is through that reverse mortgage program. I tell you, I'm really checking that out. It's a great program. Let's get over to Joe Farr. Joe, good to have you with us, my friend. Always a joy to have you here giving us a market update. I like that song, but you're here bringing us that Les played it, the song that's in that his parody. But right. You're giving us here just real numbers of what's going on. So some would say it's a little boring.
Right now.
I like it. Right now. You're the here and now.
Yeah.
So Alice and I can sing a few bars in the background if you want to humble on, but we'll probably just try.
I'll wait for my intro.
All right. Here's And here's Joe. So there's your intro. Man, what you got?
Well, today, not a lot. MBS prices are pretty much where they ended the day on Friday. The ISM Services Index came out today, but it was below last month's very good record level, but it did beat expectations. And even though it beat expectations, there was very little market reaction to the news. So not a lot of movement today, but that certainly could not be said for last week. We had a tough week in mortgage rates last week. Rates rose about an eighth of a point, or if you're looking at prices, yeah. Prices fell about 50 basis points. And all that says is if you wanted the same rate that you were quoted the Friday before to get it on this Friday, you had to pay about 50 basis points more in discount to get it. And almost all that damage came on Friday. We're all aware of the very strong jobs report that came out on Friday. Way exceeded expectations, 250,000 net new jobs, 190 were expected. The unemployment rate remained at the historically low rate of 3.7%. And then average hourly earnings rose 0.2, which was as expected. But when you look at the whole year, last October to this October, it rose at a 3.1% rate. On Friday, both stocks and bonds fell on the strong report, and likely because it adds pressure on the Fed to continue raising rates. So the other data that came out during the week was mixed, Dave. ISM manufacturing and construction spending were a little short of expectations. Consumer confidence and factory orders beat expectations. So again, the big event last week was the jobs report. And the big event this week may be the Fed meeting. There's a meeting.
Yes.
The statement's going to be released on Thursday. Now, usually that's a Wednesday release, but I'm guessing that it has to do with the election on Tuesday, that they move things back to their meetings now Wednesday and Thursday. So look for that statement to be released on Thursday. During the week, and by the way, no rate change is expected in that. And you'll recall last time it wasn't the meeting that caused the movement. It was the reading of the minutes of the movement. Now, ordinarily, the minutes aren't that informative, but in the case last time they came out, they really caused a negative reaction in the market. So I don't know if any of those things in the minutes from last week are going to make it to the front of the Fed statement, but you know, be on the lookout nonetheless. JOLTS comes out tomorrow, along with a 10-year auction. 10-year auctions are always somewhat effective, have an effect on MBS
yes.
prices, first rate. Producer price index comes out on Friday. And then, Dave, I'd ask you this question. I don't know. I mean, I've got some guesses, but how might the midterm elections affect mortgage rates? Yeah, I'm kind of thinking on Wednesday, if we see Democrats taking both houses, it might create a little flight to safety, which would be good for mortgage
yep.
rates.
That'd be good for mortgage rates, and I think if we see the wave of red that some believe might happen, then there's the presumption is more good economic times ahead, which is not so good for interest rates, good for our economy, and that's what I'm hearing too.
No question. When there's no one there to say no, it's easy to spend money.
Yeah.
And then if we see it split, like if the House goes and the Senate doesn't, probably not a lot of reaction. I think that's sort of the most benign of the outcome.
Can't separate politics and interest rates right now. They're all intertwined. I guess you could say they're always intertwined, but certainly that's a great question. So get out and vote. The most important, whoever you're going to vote for, get out and do it. We need everyone showing up at the polls. We have a good representation. This is going to be one of the most active, I think, of all midterms we've ever seen. It's going to be more people turning out based on early voting. So it may be very interesting and consequences all around. Thanks so much, Joe. Appreciate it. Can't wait to get your thoughts on the Hot Topic segment when we're talking about stories. You always do a good job of weaving in a story on your segment because it is a story. What's the Fed's going to do? Anyway, we're going to get out for a word from Knowledge Cube from Nathan. And then we got Jacob coming on from Housing Wire. Stay tuned.
At the Knowledge Coop, we work hard to create training that engages and encourages our audience. Once people are engaged in training, they are more likely to stay focused and retain the information that they need to know. So here's your training tip for the week. Next time you have an important policy or bit of knowledge you need to train, do it in short clips and make sure you sprinkle it in with a little bit of humor. Video training is highly impactful, but only when done in the way we've been conditioned through TV. Videos should be no more than 5 minutes, should get to the point, and humor should be sprinkled through to emphasize the important points. Memories are more powerful when attached to an emotion. If you need help with your company's training, please reach out to us at knowledgecoop.com and we'd be happy to assist. And that's your training minute from the Knowledge Coop, which strives for easy and fun training for the mortgage industry powered by a smart digital platform.
Easy and fun and learn. I like that. Knowledge Coop. Check it out. KnowledgeCoop.com. We've got Jacob back on the phone. He's now become a part of the podcast. Jacob Gaffney of Housing Wire. Great publication. Love what you write, what you put out there. Good to have you as a regular here, my friend. And I know you got to drop a run after this, so it's always fun. Boy, I tell you, we got some feedback on last week's segment when you were in here talking about the former administration, possibly rumors coming out. Some evidence, more evidence coming out about them possibly obstructing free commerce in the form of what J.P. Morgan was planning to do and kind of got thwarted on that. So, man, that was really interesting. Anything else hot news you got for us this week?
So I've got too much for you today. So I've got five huge things. You mentioned the theme of what's going on and the popularity of my segment. And I would venture to say that what we want is to make a very unpopular segment, because in the news business, that's how you know when you're on the right track. So I'm gonna give you five things, and you pick which one you want. Okay, which one will connect with your readers, and we'll talk about it. And if we could go through all of them, all five of them, great, but we'll put them in order of importance. Are you ready? Number one, LO Comp. Number two, ooh, Zillow. Number three, ooh, Amazon. Number four, newsjacking. I'll say it again, newsjacking. Number five, Fannie Gates. Which one? It's your show, buddy.
Always interested. Oh, man, oh, man, oh, man. What's the biggest thing? I want okay, I'm going to pick two out of here. So I want LO Comp because it's such a big issue, what's going on. And then, gosh, how can you not want to hear what the big news is on Amazon? And then, of course, the rest of it you can listen to by getting in and following your information, all that you're publishing this week. So, folks, you're not losing out. Tune in. Jacob will tell you how later on. So cover those two real fast.
All right. So everyone, I'm assuming, is aware that's a tough one. It's a tough one. I know. Like you said, it's all on HousingWire. And you can always send me an email, jgaffney@housingwire.com, especially on the newsjacking Fannie Gate. If you don't get to that, that's a bit more on the seedier side of the business anyway. But let's talk LO Comp, right? Because that is important.
Yep.
That is very important. 250 senior executives got together with the Mortgage Bankers Association to petition the CFPB or the BFCP or whatever it's going by these days to change the loan originator compensation rule. This, ladies and gentlemen, was by far the most popular story on HousingWire in October. It drew a lot of attention, and it had to go past our core readership, which are those executives, those said 250 executives. We love you. We love all of you, but the people who work for you are reading us too. So and they have some questions. They have some questions. Now, the official line is that the greater loan originator accountability will reduce errors and encouraging compliance, you know, with the regulatory environment, safer, more transparent market for consumers, right? So what they're saying is that the way the LO Comp currently is, it's too stringent, and it puts lenders in a very, very difficult box when it comes to errors on the originator side. So we're all very familiar that we're all only human. We make mistakes. You know, we get things wrong. That's fine. We need humans to do this. Data and robots can't take over the loan origination space completely. So there will be mistakes. Now, what they're saying is that if we can somehow create a sliding scale, of LO Comp, then this also gives the uptick that loan originators can kind of voluntarily reduce their compensation in order to make themselves more competitive in the market. So that is that sounds like a win-win, right? Hold the phone, not so fast. Some LOs are not pleased with the plan. So we have to ask ourselves, right? And you can think of how Richard Branson famously said that your clients don't come first, your employees come first, right?
Yeah.
The LO Comp rule, changing LO Comp rule, does that have their best interests in mind? That's what people are asking me. You know, if I'm going to reduce my rate, how does it make it more competitive? So we are still working. We're still trying to understand why the executives would get behind this. So, you know, it's going to be a very controversial issue going forward. Does the LO comp rule need examining? Absolutely. Does it need changing? We don't know. And we're going to keep bringing that this week. We hope to have more information on it going
forward.
You'll
be covering this a lot.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And we have to. I mean, I don't fully understand it entirely myself, and I'm learning, but it sounds like the big issue is how will we continue to be able to get loan officers to come into our space, those young millennial people who are in college. Now, how do we get them in the space when we can't even tell them how much we're going to pay them, right? So it's gonna be a recruitment issue. Is what's happening here. But we'll see. We'll see. I will reserve judgment forever on it. And I am, I'm talking to the execs. I'm talking to the LOs. And, the Housing Wire platform will be how it plays out. That's how you can keep in touch. Okay. So we'll leave that for now. We'll touch back. Let me wrap the Zillow Amazon together really quick. Okay. So Amazon got a new HQ coming. They're probably going to put it out by Reagan Airport in D.C. So, sorry, rest of the nation, you will not get 20,000, jobs. But then again, your home prices won't spike 10% either. So good and bad there. There's the runners-up, Dallas, probably not going to happen. New York City, New York City. We don't need it. Yeah. That would be a nightmare for the people who live there currently. But so it looks like it's going to be Crystal City. Now, Zillow has come out and they have closed their deal with Mortgage Lenders of America, officially making Zillow a mortgage lender in the space. They will probably rebrand Mortgage Lenders of America, to something that we're now being told will be Zillow Mortgage. And this is what we're seeing the Amazon model will be.
Yes.
They will buy into the space, rebrand it with their own brand, and incorporate it into their business model. So that's what we're hearing. And Zillow is the testing ground for Amazon.
Yep. That is so interesting. We all know they're coming. You've been tracking this story. I quote your article when I speak constantly. I put up that article that you wrote back in March. Was it March of this year or March of last year? You've been tracking it for a long, long time, and as you do so many things. So it's going to be really interesting. So Zillow is the kind of the blueprint for how Amazon may go. Interesting. And all these other news stories that you have up on your website, check it out, everybody. Where can they go, Jacob, to read all of this? Give it.
HousingWire.com.
HousingWire.com. Check it out.
It's all there.
Jacob, thanks so much. Appreciate you being here with us. Very much appreciated. Have a great rest of the week. Wish you could be here with the rest of the podcast, but we understand. Hey, I want to give a shout-out to one of our listeners, Laura Brandale, and she is president of AFR. She wrote me, says, Dave, I listened to all your podcasts back-to-back, and we're going to talk to her and get a little insights into what she's doing. She attended the AIME conference in Denver, if I understand correctly, so we're going to get some feedback from her, but shout out. Get a hold of me. If you're a listener, regular listener, we love hearing from you. Give me a shout out. So thank you, Jacob. Thank you, Laura, for being a regular listener, and we appreciate hearing from you. And let's run over to Alice Alvey. Alice, your segment, we kind of dip into your segment a little bit every time when we have a little piece of it. Rob does give an update, Jacob, but it really allows you to focus in on what we really need to be looking at in this regulatory world of ours. What you got?
Well, I think since we have Congress out trying to get reelected, as you said, everybody went out and vote this year.
Yep.
There isn't a lot that, is new in the legislative world. So what I usually like to do during this segment then is talk about what's important that's new with Fannie, Freddie, HUD, VA, and the others. So one thing I want to make sure everyone's watching out for is DU 10.3 has a new release coming out December 8th. And Fannie published in their recent bulletin that there are going to be changes to how DU assesses some of their credit packages. And the two areas that jump out at me that are very notable are, first of all, the fact that a housing payment ratio is now going to come back into the picture of underwriting. So we have gone, probably 10, closer to 15 years, where the payment ratio really hasn't been much of a factor in conventional lending. We really just focus on DTI, and I've had some of the newer folk to the industry going, what is a payment ratio? Why do I care? And how is that calculated? They have no idea.
Yeah.
Because everything's centered on DTI. Well, Fannie, in DU 10.3, which will come out on December 8th, This is now going to be a factor when you have those high payment and debt ratios. So the borrowers who have no debt that have been getting approved, and I'm just going to give an example of, say, 45 over 45, right? That's where you're going to see the change. We don't know to what extent. We don't know what the magic number will be. We all know that technically a debt ratio over 36 starts to change some of the risk ratings. So we'll just have to wait and see. Obviously, we're not getting any insider tips on what those new ratios might look like, and certainly borrowers' reserves will have a big impact on that. But just a heads up that the housing payment ratio is going to be back in play. The second piece that's going to be part of that rollout is that the DTI is going to be a maximum of 45% for cash-out refis. We all know cash-out refis are higher risk, and so what Fannie is now saying is once you're over 45 DTI, which, by the way, that does mean 45.0, or we would be 45.01, right? And you will need 6 months of reserves at that point. So a few things that, to me, you'll have to watch out for. Now, if you run the loan and gotten an accept or approve eligible prior to December 8th, and then you have to rerun it, the system will still pick up on that there is a previous case file number out there, and you'll have to just make sure it's recognizing that you haven't changed loan numbers or that type of thing that would cause it to think of it as a new loan. But assuming it's the same case file number, you'll be able to retain your approve eligible under the old rules. So that's the good news, obviously, within the 120-day mark for a valid AUS feedback. So anyway, that's the heads up, I think, that's most important right now. People should watch out for loan officers in particular. As you're talking to borrowers, maybe it's new construction and they may not actually apply, or they're still shopping for a home. And if you think this is an issue for your particular borrower, run your DU now. So that's my tip for the day, Dave, and I'll turn it back to you.
Tip for the day. Yeah, good. Say hi to everyone there at Union Home. Alice is, of course, the Vice President of Education and Training at Union Home. I was telling Bill Cosgrove about it. I said, how did you pull off landing Alice Alvey? He says, best thing we've done in a long time. And we now know why. So anyway, you all know why, because she's been on the program for years. Alan Pollack, good to have you here with us, my friend. Always fun to get some insights into the world of technology. What you got?
Thanks, Dave. Good to be here, as always. So I'm going to give you three options. We can talk about, just like Jacob
did. Okay, you're not
going to
do the same thing Jacob did, huh? Three options here?
I am.
I love it.
I'm going to be a carbon copy. We can talk about data.
Oh, okay. Well, let's see. That's a tough one. So let's go data. That's so bad.
All right.
That's clever. So, all right.
So, data, there's tons of stuff in the news. I could talk about what point of sales are partnering with what systems. But, I wanted to bring it back a little bit today and talk just about data. And it's kind of unique. The question many of us have is, how do we emerge as new leaders and offer new experiences to our customers with the challenges we're faced with, right? Volumes decrease.
Right.
We know that customer acquisition needs to be faster and easier. And we know that our TCO, our total cost of ownership, needs to be at a lower level. If we chase all these shiny pennies and follow digital transformation, which we have to, AI and machine learning, we know that that cost just continues to rise. So the first thing we really should be asking ourselves is, how much data do we have today? And what will it take for us to obtain more data? But the real question is, are the projects I have with that data on track? Or have they fallen off the track based on the acquisition of data? So I'm willing to guess that most of us on the call can agree. In fact, data is undisputedly the lifeblood of every organization. David, you and I have talked to many people as well where every conversation leads back to data. And so I found an interesting article. Dynatrace, which is a company, a global study of 800 CIOs they did this year, found that 76% of organizations think that IT complexities could soon make it impossible to manage a digital performance effectively. And the study further found that an average of 35 different technology systems or components compared to just 22 5 years ago is what data touches. Now, the trend is to accelerate, right, our products and how we use different things. But when you think about our systems, right, we have LOS systems, we have different vendors, we have different reporting systems, right? Those touch many components and many systems behind the scenes. And what we're doing with those systems today is where those projects are that are sometimes falling off the track. So we can take the data conversation in a couple directions, but today I want to focus really on the transformation and the customer experience and our back office, and how taking smaller steps that help you win are way more valuable than those larger steps.
That is good. I tell you, there's so much data. One of the things that we got a lot of feedback on last week, Alan, was your comment that Optimal Blue is trying to become the system of record. And that kind of rocked. You could almost, when you said it, I'm not sure people were aghast, but I can't tell you how much feedback I got on that. Where do you see, if that happens, that shift of data, how does that play into it?
Well, I think it's unique, right? Because it's much more complex for us to price loans today. There's more data that's needed to do so, and there's more rules involved, and we have more data today. So one is those transactions. So Optimal Blue, if they have a certain percentage of the market, not only do they have that data up front, but they can follow that data as it moves to the secondary side. You know, and Optimal Blue has a great secondary system attached to the back end that a lot of people use.
They do.
So you've got
yeah.
the origination data, right? You've got the data on the back end, and then they have further relationships now. If you look at ResiTrader, they've got a trading platform. So now when you start to think about from origination to sale, you've got a lot of data and you've got a lot of transactional history. So not only could you say that, you know, you could be the trading yeah. platform or you could be some repository of the industry, but reality is you have enough data to start making some decisions about those transactions or to be heavily involved in a lot of the decisions that are made for those transactions.
Well, I think it's distinctly possible that this is not just a fantasy, but it's a fact. I saw this a few years back when we were working. I was working with TMC, Texas Capital Bank, on the launch of their program. And Jack Nunnery and I are working on that. And we looked at where the data sits, what is really important. And that's what came out. Data, data, data. That's good. I appreciate you. Could have you on and we could talk about that. In fact, we are going to make a podcast about that coming up. We're not going to talk about that just yet because we're getting close to getting that really a reality. Appreciate you being here, Alan. Always loved having you on the podcast, and I appreciate your contribution. Data, data, data. Pick from any three of those. That was pretty good. I like that opener.
Thank you. Talk to
you. You got me with that. You betcha, friend. All right, we're going to be right back with Andy Schell, the Profit Doctor, after we hear from Jim Jump over at Arch MI.
Hi, David. Arch MI is happy to be a proud sponsor of the program. Today, I'd like to let your listeners know about RateStar from Arch Mortgage Insurance. RateStar makes it easy to choose what type of mortgage insurance coverage your loan needs. Quotes are delivered in seconds and represent our most competitive Arch MI rates based on the strength and quality of the loan application. That's the power of RateStar. Getting a mortgage insurance quote has never been so powerful or so simple. And with that, I'll turn it back to you, David.
Appreciate it, Jim, very, very much. Profit Doctor, good to have you in the house. I know you're doing webinars, got a whole bunch of that stuff you always got going with the MBA. But we got some specific questions again. We got three requests for questions, and it all boils down to this. Andy Schell, ask Andy this. When it comes to the thing that you think is the most important thing to think about when you're advising your clients on profitability, what are the top three and why? And I know you could turn that into a whole hour podcast, which you probably should do some point in time. But real quickly, what are the top three and why?
Wow. Okay. I would say...
You're so good at extemporaneous.
I would say...
you do extemporaneous so well. Yes.
I would say plan, measure, implement.
Yep. Yeah, I was going to say execute. Plan, measure, and execute. Yep. Yep, yep, yep. So
because
when it comes to planning... Yeah, go ahead. Shoot.
Well, no, I was going to expand on some of that. First off, real quick, it's November the 5th. Where are my financials? If you're a small company doing 50 loans or less, you should have your financials by today. If you're a big company doing 500 or more, you know, maybe it'll be another week. But you should get your financials quickly. Now, I had some more stuff to talk about on the path to success, but I'm happy to go extemporaneous with you, Dave, and talk about what does it mean to
plan. All of the above. It's like Jacob. He gave
us
all these options, and it was just like, this is options. It's too much. But we did have specific listeners asking for that, and I apologize. It actually came in over the weekend, and I was up at Baylor watching my daughter, being with my daughter for during homecoming, so I didn't get a chance to email you in advance. But these requests came in.
So, no, we can do plan, measure, execute. That's fine. Absolutely. So, you know, they sound a little bit similar, but they're really very, very different. And I want to start with the last one first. So let's start with execute first. So execute is not a bad thing. It's a good thing. It's not getting shot. It's not getting your head lopped off. It's a good thing. And execute is turning the planning and the measuring mechanisms into reality. But the important thing about execution is how the message is communicated. And so this is where leadership comes in and where culture really matters, because the execution of the plan is relying upon leadership management to effectively communicate this realistic vision for the future of the company and distribute it in a way, in an optimistic tone, frankly, that gets others to go, wow, that's a great idea. I am loving it. I'm on board. And I would even say to the listeners that in my experience working with you, Dave, for so many years, you're really great at saying to the staff, everybody, you have to work harder and do more or we're going to fail, and make them hear that in a way that goes, oh, man, let's charge the field. Let's take the hill. Let's do better and do more. So the inspirational method in which the plan is distributed is super important in order to have an effective foundation to ultimately lead to buy-in and adoption, and that leads to success. So starting with execution.
Good point. Now very good. Communication in a way. Communication is important. Yeah, the middle one.
So the middle one, starting in with measurement, is about reporting and knowing where you are and where you've been recently, and it includes where you're going to go. But measuring is not just financials. If all you do is measure financials and all you do is use financials to tell you what the P&L was last year or last month, you're probably going to fail. That's not when I say measurement, and when I teach the classes I teach, when I say measurement, I mean not just financials, and I mean forward-looking financials, and I mean activity within the company. I mean measuring capacity at every single position, measuring activity at every single position, originators, processors, LOAs, everybody, home office, every function gets measured, and that way you know what people are doing and if they're doing what they need to do in order to accomplish the vision, and that's where part of the planning comes to play. So the planning is, yes, where are you going to be when you grow up? What's your mission? What's your vision? What's your mission? What's your value statement? How does culture interact with all of those three primary documents? And then how do you get there? So planning is super important and often missed. People just go to Home Depot and buy a bunch of lumber and come in the backyard and start cutting stuff and nailing it without any idea about how to build a swing set. So it's funny to say that, but that's what people do when they start a business. Yeah, I'm a great originator. Let's start a business. Well, what about cash flow? What about warehouse lines? What about investors? What about repurchase risk? What are you going to do? What's your exit strategy? All this stuff is part of planning. And so, you know, I just blah, blah, blah extemporaneously there, Dave, for a bit.
That was good.
There's tons to all this. Way, 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 way tons to all this. And I'm happy to talk about it more. It's
First of all, Robby said that was cruel. Andy's a guy who likes to plan. He's someone who knows you, obviously. And you just shot him that extemporaneous question. I said, folks, listeners, if there's anyone out there that you could do an extemporaneous question to, it is Andy Schell. He is so smart. It's just so smart. That's really good. I like that. We could go on and on about that. Feedback's already coming in, so we're going to probably have some more questions for you next week on that. I think the planning part of it. One of the questions that just came in, so just plan on this one for next week, is how do you plan in a market like this? Oh, my gosh. Yeah, well, I think it's knowing what the drivers are, the variables are. Make sure you think those through. So, anyway, good job. Andy Schell, thank you so much for being here. Appreciate it. We got Nico from VidYarn coming up. Interested to hear about how you can communicate effectively. We're going to be right back after this brief break from our sponsor, Black Knight. Thank you.
As housing prices climb, U.S. homeowners are holding more capital equity than ever before. Effectively capturing the equity market could pose a unique challenge for lenders who may be limited by the capabilities of their current loan origination system or consumer lending platform. Lenders looking to streamline their home equity business processes can benefit from Black Knight's LoanSphere Empower loan origination system. Using this robust and intelligent technology, Empower can originate both first mortgages and home equity loans on the same system. This single configurable solution will help lenders improve margins, support regulatory requirements, and enhance customer satisfaction. To learn more about Empower, visit blackknightinc.com today.
Check it out. It's so good to have you here with us, everybody. So much going on in the marketplace. Okay, so anyway, let's get into the Hot Topic segment. Excited to have with us one of our partners in the business, and that is Vidyard. Vidyard is a company that produces video, gives you a mechanism, a tool, a platform, which you can publish your videos. Like, for example, one of the things that we have a number of our clients doing, trying to encourage more clients to do that, is when an underwriter puts out an approval, you can type out underwriters. What do they love to do? They type really fast. They like to communicate in writing. What do loan officers least like, Andy Schell? Do loan officers like to read? The answer is no way.
Of course not. They want to watch you on a video.
They want a video. They want to give me my conditions in a video and entertain me while you're doing it. So this is one of the tools that Vidyard can do. So we're encouraging clients to do that. I'm thinking of Alice chuckling in the background. She's going, how do you get an underwriter to create a video? Well, we're working on it at a couple of companies, and those that are transitioning and doing that are finding a new way to communicate with LOs, and they get it. That's a part of video. You can communicate a message so effective. I can't think of anyone better to help us through this and kind of give us some points and tips than Nico from Vidyard. Nico, good to have you on the podcast.
Thanks for having me, David.
Everyone's going to recognize his accent. Where is he calling in from? He's actually calling in from Vancouver, B.C., but originally from Belgium. So excited to have you here, be a part of the podcast, my friend. Let's get in and talk a little bit, for those that are not familiar with Vidyard. What is Vidyard? What do you do? Explain it in your words so that our listeners can get somewhat familiar with it.
For sure. So at a high level, Vidyard is a video platform that can help you with all your business needs when they relate to video. So whether it's creating that short and consumable content that we're going to talk about in a minute, distributing it on your website, on landing pages, in one-to-one emails, and then most importantly, tracking all of that content. So ensuring that you understand when someone has been clicking on your video to prioritize your follow-ups based on what people are interested in. So that's really at a high level. The rationale behind it is we all know, as you said, you know, human brains crave visual communications. We hate reading large blocks of text. So people are doing more and more video. Companies are starting to understand that. Cisco predicted by that 2021, 80% of internet traffic will be video. So with that in mind, you want to make sure that once you create video, you also fully leverage the content by understanding who's watching it, for how long they've been watching it, and you have a quick and easy way to do it. As the people were mentioning last week, you know, you're a guest from Movement Mortgage. It doesn't require a lot of infrastructure or budget to do video. You can really start with your phone today, record a short video, you send it out, you don't send it out, it's up to you, but it gets you used to being in front of your camera because that's what your recipient wants to receive as opposed to a large block of text.
You know, there's no question that you can use video to cut through a lot of noise, Nico, but what is the most important part of doing that? For me, I would imagine it's like letting your personality come through, and I think some people struggle with that. I think, you know, like everyone says, well, I have a face for radio. I can't. We've all been looking at your face, folks, for a long time. So get out there, get in front of a camera. So how do we cut through the noise? What's the most effective way that you're seeing people do so?
Yeah, I would definitely say making it more human by adding your face to an email, to a text, whatever you're sending, definitely is what's going to help you break through the noise the most. Another point, something that we always recommend is once your face is out there, use a whiteboard, write your recipient's name on it to make sure that they understand that you recorded that video for them as opposed to, you know, a generic video that could be for anyone else. It becomes so easy right these days to automate emails, automate everything and anything. But once you see your name in a video, then you know it's not automated and it's being recorded just for you and it's going to be relevant just for you.
Well, one of the things, like Stephanie, I'm communicating on your staff with, and she has a whiteboard, as and it's right there. It's just this little short looping thing that she writes on there. I want to talk to you. Call me or whatever it is. A really personal touch to reach out. And it's amazing how effective this can be to connect with people. But another part of communication, especially in the mortgage business, is building trust with your customers and prospects through video. How do you build trust quickly using video?
Yeah, that's a great question and a great, great point, David. I would say trust is number one in your space and in lots of space, when in the B2B space as well. At the end of the day, people don't buy from companies, they buy from other people. So instead of B2B, it's really H2H, like human to human. And
yeah,
I would say if you can be there in person, if you can't meet with your, you know, applicants on a daily basis, on a weekly basis, or even like any time because they're so far away, the next best thing to being there in person is video, because you can let your personality shine. You can show that you genuinely care, that you've done your research, that you know your recipient's concerns, what they're interested in, what they're trying to achieve. And by really putting your face out there, you show that you genuinely care about them.
So you could by just showing your face, you're building trust, because it's a little bit more personable in the way to do it. You know, simplifying the application process to reduce friction is something that we specialize, and Andy's firm specializes in this. We're all trying to simplify the process. How can we do that using video? I used one example already. When we have an underwriter, we issue an approval, which can be kind of complicated. It's really nice when I get that in an audio and video format. Is that a good application for video?
I would definitely say so. So not only can you, you know, record your own short videos walking someone through the next step in the application process, you could also grab videos that exist already. You know, when someone is pre-approved for a loan,
yeah,
lots of questions are pretty common. You know, everyone has the same kind of questions. There will be some very specific ones that not everybody will have. For these ones, you can create your own video. But if you have existing videos internally that you can leverage about, let's say, hey, you've just been pre-approved.
Ah, that's a good
idea. Here's what needs to happen next. As a loan officer, you have access to that video library. You can just easily grab that video, put in an email, send it to your applicant, and that person can then consume that content. You can understand when they did. You can even add some interactivity in the video so that people can see whether or not that solved their issue, or they understand what needs to happen next. Or at the end of the video, they can go back to their application and enter some more information. All that interactivity added into your video really helps to streamline that process.
I like
and make
that.
Sure no one drops off. Because
Alice, you're thinking of a lot of innovative things. You're doing a lot of innovative things over there at Union Home. What's your idea of communicating, like, underwriting conditions? I didn't even think about having a library of those somewhat created so that you could do that. How does that hit you, Alice?
I think it sounds like a great idea. Obviously, there's a certain amount that's customized per, you know, file, and you have to kind of work through exactly what does that look like, right? Am I communicating to the
right
LO in general about a file being ready, or am I getting in the weeds? And I would say, you know, some general touch points so that underwriters are human would mean a lot in a business process.
Yes.
I know I got a video by email from one of our loan officers thanking me for a referral that I had sent him, and it was short. I was surprised how much it meant to me. You know, it was.
Yeah.
So I'm a firm believer in the more you can weave these into the process. Like today, you have a signature drop down to automate your email responses. Replace that with a video that's pre-made. It's a great idea.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's, and what we're finding is that more and more loan originators are starting to submit files with a video in them explaining this, what's unique about the deal. And underwriters are saying it makes it so much easier for us to look at a file and get through some of the complexities of the file when we're seeing that. So I think that's some really interesting things there. So Nico, when it comes to the sales side of the business, tracking and measuring performance is a big deal. Talk about that if you could.
Once you start creating those videos, as I said, you know, you send them out there, the big difference between video and another email or a white paper or whatever else that might be is that with a video and with a technology like ours, you can actually start tracking when someone has opened your video. Have they watched all the way through? did they get back to it at some point? So if you're, you know, like you're working a deal and someone is going dark on you for a while, but then you get a notification that they just opened up your video again, or they forwarded it to, you know, their partner or a colleague, whoever that might be, you can react on that. You can be like, hey, I know we haven't talked in a while, but I understand you just consumed my content again. Would now be a good time to reconnect or to, you know, put some time to revisit?
I love that. Being able to track and measure how long someone listened to will certainly give you some insights of their interest, what's going on there. Is there other, I mean, I can see that on the sales side of it. Is there other examples where this works outside of the sales process?
For sure. So as a company, we really focus on four areas: sales, marketing, but then internal communications and support are two big ones as well. And at the end of the day, it all comes down to the same, right? We crave visual communications. We want to consume content through video. We don't want to read big blocks of text. So if you are giving an update to all of your loan officers as an underwriter, you want to explain, you know, something that just happened or something that's changing, instead of just sending them an email, you can record a short video explaining to them what happened or what needs to happen. If you're a manager and you have a team that might be in different locations, again, next best thing to being in person, if you can't be there in person, is just recording a short video, sending it to all of them, tracking when they've watched it to understand, is my content actually resonating? Should I make my video shorter? So things like that, yeah.
I like that. Yeah, especially when it comes to, like, Alice, I keep coming back to you. You're training. How much more effective it would be to be able to watch how many people actually watched your training video all the way through going, oh, yeah, I watched it. Sure, you did. We're looking at the tracker here, not so much. So that's really interesting. I like that idea.
Yeah, we have something.
Go ahead.
We do the same, like, internally. We just have a new code of conduct that everybody needs to, review to make sure that everybody does so. You can't just say, oh, yeah, I checked it, I signed it. People like our HR team can actually make sure you reviewed it. Same with a new, you know, like a new employee. If you want them to go through some training before they are ready to go, you can do that. And again, make sure they've gone through everything before you give them the access to all of your technology, to all of your tools, and that they actually, you know, get going.
What is the optimal length of a video? And I guess you could say it's different based on who you're communicating with and the content or the purpose of the video, but is there any general guidelines, Nico, that you recommend our listeners follow when producing videos or doing creating videos?
Yeah, David, you're entirely right. It depends on a few different things. But as a rule of thumb, I would say if you're creating your own video, try and keep it under a minute, just because people's attention span is becoming shorter and shorter. Obviously, if you have a webinar or if there's like specific content that people are interested in learning more about, it can be longer. If you have an hour, it can be an hour. But if you're trying to break through the noise or convey a short idea, a short message, if you keep it under a minute, that's really where you'll see the best engagement rate.
Andy Schell, let's get over to you. Your thoughts on the use of video. Can accounting departments use video?
Well, of course, but let me set my question up. So, Nika, thanks for being on the show. When David and my kids, or Alice and Joe's kids, were little, so in the 80s, we drugged the boys to make them sit down. I actually refused to do that. But so you drug the kids to make them sit down, but then we launched Sesame Street and learned, hey, wow, kids will sit down and watch something where they think the content is engaging and interesting. So now we don't do that anymore. We accept that the boys have lots of energy, and we need to give them data in a way that they'll hear it. So for our grown boys, the yellows, some of them. we need cool videos with explosions in the background with a James Bond model saying to them, we need 2 years' tax return from your borrower. So how do you take that image in a way that would communicate effectively? How do you do that quickly? How do you create effective and exciting videos where you got to generate 10 in a day? I mean, how do you convert this into action that makes sense, that's effective to distribute?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say I totally agree with you, but I would say in the business world, people get excited with, I mean, the bar for excitement is much lower. If you're watching a TV show, for sure, there has to have a lot of action. If you're in your office all day and you receive a video, even if it's semi-bland, honestly, it's probably going to be a little more exciting than the next email, than the next report you need to read. So I would say the first step, just doing it, is really probably going to spark some excitement on the recipient's end, no matter what you have in it. I agree with you, though, that it's definitely not a silver bullet. So you want to make sure that, like anything else, you have to keep it exciting, well, spice it up. Whether it is by having your dog in the video or by making something funny, is entirely up to you. But yeah, I agree with what you're saying.
So, Nico, maybe we can hear more about my next point was, how do you get people to click on it? And maybe that's a question we can talk next week with Alan about. When I get a video, if I have to download something onto my computer from an email that I might not know about, I don't click on it. I will not download. I've been trained about viruses, so right? So how do we actually get people to then watch what we sent them?
Yeah, that's a great question as well. That's one we often get. So when we send a video, when you send a video, so everything is different, but that's the beauty of a tool like Vidyard. You're not actually sending a video file. You're just sending a thumbnail, and the video will, when someone clicks on it, it starts autoplaying in a new tab that can be looking exactly like your own website. So people wouldn't have to download any files. So that helps for two things. One, it doesn't get caught in a spam filter. Two, recipient doesn't have to actually download a file. And three, once they're on that branded sharing page, you can also add calls to action so that if someone that really likes the video, they can click on a button to, you know, request more information or start an application, whatever else that might be that you want to put as a call to action in.
Wow, great. Sounds awesome. Thanks.
Yeah, I got an idea, Andy. You know, so we've heard of Barney, you know, the old kid video Barney.
Oh, yeah.
So we
exactly
need to have an accounting department that comes up with Arnie. Arnie videos from the accounting department. That's just a play in words. Sorry, that was pretty bad. But anyway,
no, it could be a dragon. A dragon instead of a dinosaur. Or it could be a pterodactyl. That's always good.
Well, what's so funny about that is that there was a video that was being done in one particular company where the underwriters, I've been encouraging these underwriters to publish these videos to you, send a video out to the LO, tell them that they did a good job, give them some kudos, it'll go a long way, wrap a little sugar around that bitter pill of all the conditions they have to add to that file because they poorly submitted it, but give them some kudos around that. And what's caught that is this particular company lets you bring your dog to work. And so this little dog, cutest little thing, jumped up in her lap, was doing it. That got more attention than anything else. Again, it comes down to the personalization of it. With that, let's go over to Joe Farr. Joe, your thoughts on all this? Are you a video guy, Joe?
It's a better way to communicate. But so much in our industry is driven by compliance and the ability to track what you said, especially the consumers. So I wonder, Nico, have you run into that? Are there hurdles that need to be considered when it comes to using this method of communication?
Yeah, indeed. Compliance comes up a lot for sure. I would say our customers are handling it two different ways. Some of them will only use pre-canned videos where they can add some personalized elements in the video. So at a company level, you really fully control the messaging and the LOs can only add some information inside the video. Some others are just considering it video voicemail. So the same way a voicemail is hard to track or to pre-filter, it gets archived. Same way if the video would get archived and you can get back to it later on if there is any confusion or contention. But those are the two ways that companies circumvent that.
We could go on and on and on about this topic. It's so important. I think, Joe, as I was thinking about it, Barry Habib puts out his market commentary on a video basis, and there's a lot of data there where you can mix in and, you know, you're watching. I think it's a little bit – when the more complex it will be, the more you can do it through video, I think – actually can hold people's attention. Otherwise, you can just get lost in it. Either that, you could do a music parody like Les does at the beginning of our podcast. But we're out of time. It's so good to have you here with us, Nico. And so thank you so much for being here. How can people learn more about the company? Give the company website and any other places you think they should go to learn more on how to use video effectively.
Yeah, I would definitely start on our website, vidyard.com. So that's VIDYARD. From there, you can get redirected to lots of very interesting resources. As I said, and as it was said last week, start recording your own short videos and see how that pans out. And I think little by little, it will become second nature to a lot of people. and it will benefit both the recipients as the senders because it's easy, it's efficient, and people like it. It can be just fun. So I would say, like, try and have some fun with it.
Yeah. Jake and Adam talked about that for Movement Mortgage, and they truly have fun with it. And you guys do a great job in your videos. I was just giving, before we started the podcast, I was giving your marketing department a real shout-out because they did a great one around Halloween. So good. Go back and listen, listeners, to last week's podcast and then come back and listen to this. There's a lot of things, innovative things you can do with videos, and it could be the differentiator that could make a difference in your business, especially when you look at how to communicate more efficiently and effective. Nico, so good to have you with us. Really appreciate it. Say hi to all our friends there at Vidyard. I encourage people to check it out, vidyard.com. Check out the videos and all the other contents.
Thanks so much for your time, David. Thanks for having me. It was great to be on the show.
It's good to have you. Got to have you back. There's going to be a lot more focus on this topic as we move into the new year. Appreciate you listeners being here with us each and every week, allowing us to share with you what's going on in the marketplace. A special thank you out to all of our regulars, Andy, Alice, Joe, Alan, and now the new participant is Jacob, and it's Gaffney, so I finally got it right. Anyway, also a special thank you to our sponsors, Arch MI, Black Knight, Open Mortgage, the MBA Lenders One, the Mortgage Collaborative, Velma, Knowledge Cube, CardTap, and Vidyard. So good to have you with us, and tell others about the podcast if you would be so kind. That's how we grow, and our listenership is having it shared virally. Appreciate you. And look forward to having you back here next week. It's going to be a great show. We've got someone from Ginnie Mae. Michael Hoff will be here. Very excited about that podcast, so don't miss it. Look forward to having you back here next week. Thank you.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.